Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. We do have a quorum. We have a report from closed session. I think that's next.
Yes, President Pearson. The board continued to discuss the recruitment of a permanent general manager at the last closed session. Thank you.
Okay, agenda review. Anybody have any additions, deletions? Want to do anything with the overall agenda? Okay. It's hard to believe, but I don't have any public comment. Oh, okay.
I was
really worried.
Not to worry.
Not to worry.
All right, so we will start with Ms. Bettenhausen and then Ms. Dickinson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Is that on? Green light, green light. Thank you very much, Mr. President. I'm glad to be here today on the umpteenth rainy day we've had recently. And I have good news to report, and that is that my entire cactus garden has now been weeded. And I survive. That is mixed news perhaps for some, but I am very glad that it happened. I would like just to ask some general questions about the format of the agenda. I really am thankful to everybody for spieling it out, as we used to say in German all the time, because there's just a tremendous amount of material. But I would have the first question is, when will the utility billing summary pages be posted for March and April? Usually by this time of the subsequent month, it's up, but it's not on the website. So it's our only way of finding out what water usage is in the district month by month, or at least 2 months by 2 months. And so I'd really appreciate seeing that again in a somewhat timely fashion. Second, when there are references in agenda items, as there are today, to previous board actions, I have to say I've become a computer addict. And I use the computer to prepare for these meetings. And a favorite word of mine now is link. If there is a link to a document approved by the board at a prior meeting, all I have to do is click the link, and it doth show up upon the screen. Otherwise, I have to search, and depending on the document, it can take a while. I do want to say that a member of the consultants for this district, namely Mr. Carmel, is one of the most helpful people in that regard for almost, but not quite, instantaneous responses to requests for links, and I thank him heartily. The third is that in several of the actions today, there is no draft of a resolution or even a recommendation. There is staff discussion about what the board might do. But again and again over the years, I have been, I confess, frustrated because there is no wording of a resolution or even a recommendation to look at for consideration by the board. And so we get amendments flying around or in perhaps mushy consensus, although that's not always clear. So please include formal proposals from the staff about the resolution. And finally, there's so much advanced material. I thank you all for never sleeping in the 72 hours before a meeting, because that's the only way you could possibly get it read. I, on the other hand, sleep about 10 hours a night. So I thank you very much for your diligence.
Excuse me, Chris. Thank you.
Where's your permit?
Ms. Dickinson?
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Pearson and directors and staff. A couple of little items, but in a way they're not. When you consider we have, we're talking about dollars almost at every meeting. I go to the gym one on Saturdays for class, and sometimes my husband and I may eat at the La Terrazza restaurant, and so we park in the parking lot that the district uses. I noticed that this past Saturday, the district car was not parked there as it usually is on the weekend, as I'm wondering why, who was using it, and for what. The other thing, yesterday I was coming back from Templeton, again, I see these CCSD trucks leaving town around 3 o'clock, leaving town to go south on 1 or east on 46. The other issue in regarding that is, why have we still not addressed the use of the employee use of these trucks being used to go to Templeton, Paso, Atascadero, Santa Margarita, wherever, at our expense? And we've asked and asked and asked for that to be addressed by previous boards. We've asked this board, and I'm still not hearing anything. The evaporation pond, I get the weekly reports from Mr. Rocky at the regional board, and in 1 week, because of the amount of rainfall we've had, but this is quite alarming, in 1 week we have doubled the amount. It was down to about 10.5 inches. We're now, as of May 21st, it was 22 inches in the evaporation pond. So, you know, that which is, we, as much as we wanted the rain, it has really set them back, I'm guessing, in needing to or being ready to truck the contents in the base of the pond. So I'm just wondering if we can get an update on that at all. That would be appreciated. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a new one from Ms. Hendricks.
Good afternoon. The Resources and Infrastructure and the Finance Committees are reviewing the PG&E Sustainable Solutions Turnkey Program. This presents as a path to resolving Cambria's sewer treatment plant problems. Those problems are the result of deferred maintenance to the plant. The district has ignored its problems for years. PG&E presents an attractive package, professional and polished, leading to $11 million in repairs and upgrades to the sewer plant. PG&E is not concerned with Cambria's financial issues. The company, which is now in bankruptcy and may face criminal charges, is looking to its own concerns. PG&E has a history of malfeasance and corruption with regard to community concerns. Its lack of concern for the public was revealed in the investigations that followed the San Bruno gas explosion in 2010. A gas pipeline exploded in San Francisco this past February, burning for hours before PG&E could shut it off. The company's failure to remedy its practices led to last year's Camp Fire, which is the proximate reason for its bankruptcy. No doubt this huge company offers advantages of technology and funding, but I ask the board to air PG&E's issues fully before tying the district into a partnership with them. I'd like to step back from the crisis pending at the sewer plant to Cambria's current finances and how the district got here. Hasty decision-making and rushing into unfavorable financial agreements helped push Cambria into a situation in which day-to-day needs were ignored in favor of the emergency water system project, which now consumes so much of Cambria's money. Maintenance and necessary improvements to the sewer plant and other infrastructure were not done. Now PG&E, under pressure to help customers reduce electricity use in its programs that have a history of corruption, offers Cambria a deal. Cambria is desperate enough to overlook PG&E's corporate misbehavior, but I ask the board to ask the Resources and Infrastructure Committee and the staff to seek alternatives to partnering with this corporate criminal. Let's seek other sources of funding and set a higher standard for Cambria. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the last public comment I have, or... Okay, very good. So we will move on to Item 3A, regular business. Discussion and consideration to schedule a town hall meeting.
I'm sorry. I know you've already moved off of public comment. I think there were a couple of direct questions maybe the staff could be answering.
Okay.
I don't know if you caught the posting of the water billing information and then the question that was just asked by
Ms. Heinrichs.
Mm-hmm.
So I can certainly respond to public comment. With respect to the utility billing summaries, I was figuring I'd be following up with Pam to make sure that we do that. I'm not sure if you have any update, Pam, but if it's not on the website, I assume it's not on the website. And we'll make sure. So we're going to follow up to make sure that the utility billing summary is posted to the website. With respect to the PG&E turnkey project, the discussions with resource and infrastructure as well as the finance committee recognize that we have a number of steps ahead of us with respect to due diligence, including contract review, deliverables, financing options, due diligence associated with how do we need to address existing indebtedness and covenants on existing indebtedness? So in terms of PG&E's status, especially with respect to bankruptcy, I certainly agree that that should be part of the due diligence. We have done some research on that point already, but including the understanding that the funds for this program are segregated from PG&E's normal funds. There was other questions, though, in that public comment that related to PG&E, and I think that, again, that's appropriate for the due diligence before final recommendations come to your board for any contract.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you, President Pearson.
Yes, thanks for catching that. Yes, Vice President Farmer.
I just want to follow up on Ms. Dickerson and her comment about the recent rains that we had and how it's affecting the water level at the pond, the impoundment basin. And speaking with both John Rocky and Chief Plant Operator Jim Green, it does appear that the level rose, I believe, from 20,000 gallons to either 40 or 60,000. I don't remember the exact figure. So instead of the pond being cleared out by the end of this month, it's probably going to be perhaps the middle of next month. And the Regional Water Quality Control Board is fine with that because they understand the situation that has taken place with regard to the additional rain. So I just wanted to mention that.
Great. Thanks for clearing that up. And thank you, Director Rice, for catching me on not answering those questions and stuff. Appreciate that. Okay, back to 3A, discussion and consideration of the town hall. Do you want to introduce this, Mr. Ogren?
This particular item is on the agenda for based on the direction of your board. A couple of meeting times have been identified, and I think it's for your board's discretion.
Okay. So anyone want to comment on either the dates or the process that we're going to pursue to have a town hall?
Could we have the dates stated again just as reference for?
Okay. The two dates that were picked out were Wednesday, July 24th in the afternoon, either from 2 to 4 or 2 to 5, and Wednesday, July 31st from 2 to 4 or 2 to 5. And those were chosen based upon availability of the hall, which is getting a lot of use these days. So any discussion on the process, Director Howell?
This is more on the date.
That's fine.
I was just looking at the calendar. It looks like the week of the 31st has less other things going on, so that might be a good choice. That would be looks good to me anyway that way. There's meetings are almost back to back the previous week.
Okay. So, is there any discussion as to whether we should have a separate meeting with staff prior to that meeting, or should we have this meeting with how much staff should be at the meeting if we're not going to do that at the town hall meeting. Any ideas on that? Director Rice.
I was just going to suggest that I think that it would be appropriate for the president and vice president to put together what it is that they need from the staff, and then I don't know if we need staff there because we're talking about the mission statement, but it would be a good idea to at least put some kind of something together for discussion of the mission statement, et cetera. I like how we go about doing that. I mean, we're not going to hire somebody to kind of walk us through the process. Then we need at least a checklist of steps or something so that it's not something that we've ever done at the district before, but I'm sure there's resources available through CSDA or something like that to provide that. Maybe staff has some input or thoughts on resources that might be available for...
Okay.
To help us
through that
process.
And if it's the mission of the CCSD, then staff should have some input as to that, I would think. Correct?
Yeah.
Director Steidel?
Yes. My position would be that the staff has a contribution to make to that because they're the ones who actually execute a good part of the mission in terms of the infrastructure that provides the commitment of the mission to the community. So I don't know whether it's a function of participation in the actual meeting or perhaps asking the leadership group of the staff to interact with them directly to obtain the information and then make that available to the board. But I do think that the board outlining some things in terms of what they view to bring back to or to take to the staff initially just as a starting point for them would be a value. And then I think the process issue that Director Rice laid out is important too.
Director Rice.
I was just going to say, I think you could also, instead of, if you don't want to have it be the president and vice president, I think the president could appoint an ad hoc committee of two board members to do that kind of prep work for that discussion for the community.
Okay.
I mean, right. Unless we're going to do it at the meeting, I'm not sure when else we would be able to do it as a board.
Right. Director Howell.
Yeah, I'm kind of trying to visualize this process. This is going to engage the public and the board. I would think that it would be appropriate to have as many staff as possible at that meeting because they are part of the public, and the public needs to hear what the staff has to say. It seems to me, and another choice would be to meet with all of the staff and the board in a regular public meeting and take input from the staff. It would be useful to hear what they have to say, what they think the mission should be. So I don't know quite, but I'm not sure about just a small group meeting with staff and then carrying that to the town hall. I think it might be more productive, although perhaps less organized. It's a little hard to visualize, but it seems to me that there might be an opportunity for some interchange between staff and the public, which might not otherwise be possible, and it might be useful.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, Vice President Farmer, add some clarity here.
I don't know if I'm adding any clarity, but I tend to concur with everything that's been said. I think one of the things to take into consideration is the fact as to how this board and staff have evolved in the recent months. And I think that the members of the community are becoming, more appreciative of the work that's being done, the openness with the way district district work is taking place. Even though we still have the ongoing challenges that don't seem to be going away, so I think the more opportunity there is for not just the board but for staff to be involved at this meeting, and the public, of course, being there as well, I think it's just a collaborative effort among everyone that would encourage, like I said, a better feeling as to the direction that the board and the district are moving in collaboration with what the community has to offer. Thank you.
Okay, so it sounds like the consensus is that we either have some or all of the staff at the town hall so that they could give input as well as the public. Is that, and we have a three-hour meeting because it'll probably take at least 3 hours just to get through some of that. Okay.
But the only concern that I have is stripping the entire staff out for a meeting, I think, affects their the workload that they have is quite extensive, and the idea of pulling everyone out of the office for a 3-hour period when they're in the processes of preparing agendas for our meetings, for putting out billings, for all of the processes that go on, and I'm just thinking that it could be difficult to do that, or create more of an obstacle for staff than anyone else by doing that, because it's their time being taken away from their workday.
Yeah, Director Howe.
Well, I'm not proposing that staff do this without pay.
I didn't say that.
And I believe the meeting would be scheduled for, I think we're talking about the evening, 5:30, thereabouts.
No, we're talking 2 to 5.
Oh, you're talking about 2 to 5. Okay, then your point's well taken. However, I think a skeleton crew would be sufficient.
People designate who they would like to go to the meeting.
Something like that.
To represent their group.
Hey, good idea, yes. At least department heads and maybe some other delegate from each group or something.
Okay, so
I'd like to hear from Mr. Ogren, if you don't mind.
I didn't see your light on.
I'll put a little one on my head or something. I don't know. So in listening to your board's discussion, my thoughts would be that we would have the various managers attend. As preparation for the meeting, a thought would be to have each of the working groups do some brainstorming and come up with bullet lists, and that way we make sure that we're engaging all the employees, and then identify in the staff report the different work groups and the bullet points that were developed, and that way you can see those as part of the written material prior to the meeting, but then have each of the managers attend in order to speak on behalf of the different working groups.
Okay, I think we have a solution. Vice President Farmer.
I think my concern, and I don't know how this is going to fit into the our interim general manager's schedule, but this meeting is on Wednesday. He's usually here on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and he has other obligations. I'm just wondering, is it possible that we could consider doing the meeting on Thursday, August 1st? If that's possible, if the hall's available at that time.
Okay,
Director. If I might, in response to Director Farmer's, the meeting, if it was to be scheduled on July 24th, would certainly be more challenging for me. Wednesday, July 31st, has no conflicts because that happens to be the fifth Wednesday in a month. Mm-hmm. So other board meetings won't exist on that, but there is a board meeting that I'm scheduled to attend on the 24th.
Okay.
Cool.
All right, so we'll do it the 31st, and we'll charge the interim general manager with getting his managers to get some input, and should we have somebody or an ad hoc or somebody do some background work that we could give out to the staff and have ready for that meeting?
What do you mean by background?
How to?
Uh-huh.
How to?
As the teacher on the board, I'm volunteer to help out with that.
Okay, there's one volunteer for the ad hoc. Do we have another one?
Well, I'll hang out with Amanda and we'll work it out.
Okay, and if any of the other directors have any input, please see the ad hoc committee. Okay?
Good. Are you okay with that, Director Rice?
I think my little squeak over here probably spoke for itself. Do we need a motion to create an ad hoc committee for that purpose?
All right. So we have an ad hoc committee, and the date is going to be July 31st from 2 p.m. until 5 p.m. Excellent. I move on now to item 3B, Mr. Ogren.
Chairman Pearson, members of the board and the public, item 3B is a discussion and consideration of approving amended covenants related to property located at 2706 Main Street, a lease with the Cambria Historical Society for use of the property for the Santa Rosa Schoolhouse, and authorizing water and sewer service for the property. And legal counsel Carmel is going to cover the verbal discussions.
Thank you, President Pearson, and members of the board.
Yes. Okay, so do you want to hear from the public first, or do you want to speak first?
I'll be very short.
Okay.
I'm pleased to report that after many months of discussion and negotiation, the Beringers, the Historical Society, and the district have developed an amendment to the covenant agreement and restrictions that will allow the historic Santa Rosa Schoolhouse to be relocated to the old dog park property owned by the district. I'm also pleased to report that the ad hoc committee and the Historical Society negotiated a lease for that property. It has a 25-year term and a 25-year option, $1 a year. However, the Historical Society is responsible for all costs of operation, all maintenance costs, insurance to protect the district, and must indemnify and hold the district harmless with regard to any claim or damage that arises out of their use of the property. Lastly, in order for that project to have adequate restroom facilities, we're recommending that you authorize staff to issue an intent to serve letter for that project. And with that, I'd be glad to answer any questions.
All right. I'd like to hear from the public first. First is Ms. Dickinson, followed by Ms. Bettenhausen.
Thank you. I couldn't, when this came up and the presentation was made by Mr. Ellers on this project, on that day, I said it was the most illogical setting and place for that to be on Center Street, and I suggested the old dog park. I also suggested that rather than sewer and water being provided at the ratepayers' expense, or maybe it's being provided by the Historical Society. But in any case, I don't believe that a water or sewer should be provided. No intent to serve. Because we have, and I remember, so I did mention that. A porta potty, that a handicap porta potty, could be placed there and could be enclosed with some very nice, attractive looking enclosure so that you don't just see a porta potty. And there's precedent in this town for it. Santa Rosa Chapel, as we all know, is a very old and historical site. It is open to the public every day. They have events there, open to the public. And I go to those events. And I've used that porta potty. And they've screened it with some lattice. And it looks great. And it's off to the east side, so you don't see it when you're driving up to the chapel. But I absolutely oppose this for more than one reason. You are going to get hit, if you're not already hit with enough lawsuits. This is going to create folks on the water wait list, the folks who aren't on the water wait list, come at you and say, so you've allowed this to happen for this reason, so why can't we get our water meter and connection and intent to serve? This truly is a problem. And in the language in the agenda packet. I mean, it says the board of directors may consider the issuance of intent to serve letters for affordable housing projects, which the county LCP, that's in the county LCP, as defined in CCSD Ordinance 1-99, for public educational facilities, which this may be considered, publicly owned park and rec facilities, and other governmental facilities. Sorry, folks. I think this would be a huge mistake, and there is an alternative. There are public restrooms within yards of where it's going to be located. There's no need for us to put in a water and a sewer line for this project. So I would ask the board to really consider this with the ramifications that could be coming down the pike. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm having people assist me passing out this sheet because I'm proposing an amendment to the lease. I don't have any sentiments particularly about the location other than the, in my estimation, the rather dramatic increase of flooding from Santa Rosa Creek there. But that's not my purview. I'm one of those nuts about climate, and I won't bring that up after I just did. But I want to propose an amendment. When it says, quoting the document from 2001, the district finds, this is page 17, 1D, the district finds that the use of the property for the location and preservation of the schoolhouse, which will be operated by the Historical Society for the benefit of Cambria, as a park-like and educational not-for-profit museum open to the public, is a this grammar is sort of strange, is a public purpose that will serve the community within the powers and authority of the district. I ask you please to amend that paragraph by the addition of this sentence. This finding sets no precedent for any future CCSD decisions about parks under the purview of the CCSD or about the meaning of park-like and or educational. And then my second point is that there is, as I said in the opening public comment today, what exactly is the wording by which CCSD awards water and sewer services to this project and or provides an intent to serve letter? The staff recommends to you that you do such, but there's no wording for this resolution. And I would urge you to consider very carefully how the motion will be worded and who seconds it, and what your vote is on the exact wording that will award water and sewer services to this project by overt action, not by implication in the lease, and how it will provide an intent to serve letter, because neither of those actions is officially explicitly stated in the material before you. I thank you very much for considering my two suggestions.
Thank you. Next is Ms. Stewart.
Laurel Stewart, project manager for the schoolhouse relocation for CHS. I guess I'll just say that we're following county requirements in the planning process and providing an ADA accessible restroom, unisex singular restroom. There is a restroom already in the building, which we'll remove. This building has historic use on a meter for about six decades. A new meter is being created, but it's for 0.39 as per Table A in the ordinance. And we plan to dryscape. We plan to have water use at a minimal level, given that our usage is minimal. We're using it on weekends for drop-in traffic. We're using it from 8:30 to noon on some weekdays a few times a month, 2 months of the fall and 4 months at the beginning of the year for our school group educational tours. And we are limited to 4 fundraising events in the footprint of the schoolhouse per year. So this is not heavy use. And I think that's all I have to say, unless there are any questions.
Yes, Director Rice.
I just had a quick question. So you're not going to use any of the water for landscaping, correct?
I'm not saying not any of the water. There is okay. A little garden for the kids who come.
Okay.
And so
there may
be. But we're going to be using natives and,
some minimal outdoor use,
right.
Possibly.
Right.
Okay. Thank you.
No irrigation, just specifically on, yeah.
Yeah, I'd also like to mention that, if I'm not mistaken, Ms. Stewart just mentioned that the likely use would the allocated use is like 0.39 EDUs for water, and I believe the historical museum, which will be open, which is already open, will be open more hours than. Then the schoolhouse uses less than that right now.
Right.
Just to let people know, well, how much is 0.39 EDUs?
Yeah, that's a good point, because we have a pretty extensive and water-sucking garden, really, at the Giannini Bianchini house. Also, I do want to point out that we are paying connection fees, the Cambria Historical Society, of about $5,000 for the water, and we're paying $3,000 in retrofits, and we're paying, I don't know, what is it? It's over $3,000 for the sewer, and we're putting it all in at our expense.
Okay, Director Howell.
Ms. Stewart.
Ms. Stewart.
Quickie question.
Director Howell has a question.
Sorry. Is it a county requirement to provide drinking water?
No, just the restroom.
Just the restroom.
Yeah.
Thank you. Ms. Reese would like to also speak on this item.
Hello, my name is Martha Reese, and I'm a pretty new resident to Cambria, and I just had a point about this issue. I work at Hearst Castle, and we have a lot of porta-potties, and they seem to do really well, and we have lots of people who visit our facility. And I've also seen portable drinking fountains at some events that I've been to in the past. So I'm just thinking, if Hearst Castle can use porta-potties, and they probably won't even be as nice as the one that's been suggested. My point. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, additional discussion on this issue? Any at all? Director Rice.
First of all, I'd like to thank Mr. Ellers, and Ms. Stewart, and the Historical Society, and Mr. Beringer for working on this project to get this this accomplished. And I know that it wasn't an easy or fast thing, but I'm glad that we're finally seeing it happen. I had the question about the projected demand for use, but that was answered by Ms. Stewart. I don't know that I've ever seen a porta potty that's ADA compliant. I'm sure they make them. Okay, so that would be my concern. But I don't have any objection to the small amount of water that would be used, and this is less than even half of what a residential intent to serve would be projected for its demand. I'm a little concerned about water on the landscape, but if there's no irrigation system and we don't have a big hose going out there, I think that that's not a reason to not do this, and they're paying the connection fees. I support having this, and I do tend to agree with Dr. Bettenhausen on the that it would be a good idea if we had some kind of language speaking to the fact that this is for a public purpose. It's not, the district doesn't own the schoolhouse, but we're providing it as part of our parks. And I would kind of like to see a restriction on the connection itself, that it can't be moved somewhere at the end of 25 years or when they move the schoolhouse, if they move it to another, that only the Historical Society can use that new connection. And if they were to move to another location that already had a connection, they couldn't then turn that over for and sell it to some other business who would use it. So, I mean, I would like to see, just for protection of the district as a whole.
Yeah, I think the restriction on the water meter that you're talking about is in the lease.
Oh,
that they can't move it, that they can't sell it, that they can't do anything with it.
It is, and it's also pertinent to the property. It can't be moved.
Right, but people, there's a history in this town of people selling water meters they're no longer using. So I just want to make sure that we're not going to create that kind of situation.
Right, and that's ultimately our water meter pertinent to our property.
I see. Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, as soon as our possessory interest in this property ends, you know, at the end of a lease, we are required to move the schoolhouse off the property but leave all underground utilities.
Right.
Yeah.
Mr. Carmel, would you please speak to Ms. Bettenhausen's other paragraph that she'd like to add here?
If the board wants to adopt it, I don't see any problem with that. The paragraph's already in there. She wants to amend it with the underlined language.
Yes. So do you think it's necessary under your legal opinion?
Candidly, no, but sometimes I'm wrong. It can give you the sense that it's not creating any precedent. I have no problem with including it.
Mr. Ogren.
Yeah, my only alternative thought was that the precedent and what future boards might do, I'm not sure really it's dictated by this agreement. Perhaps your board might consider, you know, an additional motion with this language that's just clarifying that this action is not precedent on other parks and rec. So whether it's incorporated into the agreement or done by separate action of your board, I think you have a couple of different options.
Okay, Director Howell.
I'm having a problem finding the paragraphs at question here. Can someone guide me on that?
It's in the lease agreement.
It's on the lease agreement?
Yeah.
1D? It's the last recital.
Oh, wait a minute. I didn't.
1D. Okay, so it's in the recitals right at the beginning of the lease agreement.
Okay, I think I found it.
And President Pearson, if I might, you know, my point is that this is an agreement between two parties, you know. In terms of a precedent on a community-wide basis, that's where my suggestion was you might, you know, take it as a separate motion. That way it's not restricted to an agreement between two parties.
Okay, so the motion then would be that this lease agreement does not set a precedent for any future CSD decisions about parks and park-like and educational. Basically, we would reiterate what Ms. Bettenhausen wrote.
Are you saying within the agreement or as a separate motion?
As a separate motion.
Okay. I think that is what I think that, that, is.
That's mm-hmm. what we're getting recommended so, by staff. So.
Yeah, I think that works.
So,
works for me.
Director Al.
No problem with what you're proposing, but I do wonder if maybe we could hear from Mr. Carmel just to respond a little bit. The issue of issuing an intent to serve letter, it's suggested lays the district, makes it more difficult for the district to defend against future lawsuits. Can we hear your opinion about that?
Well, a lot of things trigger lawsuits. It's hard to predict. In this case, I think this is a very unique item. In the staff report, you'll see that we went back to 2001 when the Water Code Section 350 declaration of emergency was made, and they actually took great pains to articulate what uses could be considered for future intent to serve letters, and this falls pretty cleanly within that. This is a public educational facility. So with regard to public educational facilities, yes, this may set some precedent, although those precedents are always within the board's sound discretion. So I don't have much concern with regard to it because it's hemmed in pretty tightly with regard to what the district originally considered when it set the 350.
Okay, but the current resolution doesn't include an intent to serve letter
Which resolution? I mean the action? No, it doesn't.
It
includes, right. And we need to touch on that issue too because it was another issue Dr. Bettenhausen raised. There's no requirement that you issue an intent to serve letter through a resolution. You certainly can if you want to, and if you want to, we can easily defer that component and bring it back next month. But what we were recommending is just a straightforward motion to direct staff or to authorize staff to issue an intent to serve letter for the historic Santa Rosa Schoolhouse project. That would be the motion that we were looking for.
Okay. But we need another motion to approve the lease and the covenant.
That's correct.
Okay. Yes.
I just wanted to further talk to the potential risk or issue on intent to serve. As this would be for an incremental portion of a unit, I think that it more than satisfies the idea that it isn't opening something up to an application that would be available for other people on the intent to serve list. So I don't see that that proposes a risk or infers a risk.
May I?
Sure.
I actually am not suggesting that it does, but I wanted to remind our friends out in the world that anybody can sue anybody over anything. So the fact that we are doing this may or may not, it's not that it will lay us open to a lawsuit. It's whether it will make it more difficult for us to defend against the lawsuit. And what I'm hearing from counsel is that it will not make it more difficult. Is that a correct understanding?
I mean, that's how I'm interpreting it. Remember, the other use that's allowed is affordable housing. Those are the two they carved out, pretty narrow. And in this case, I think it underscored the fact that we're talking about 0.39 EDU allocation, which is a fairly small allocation. So in the grand scheme of things, again, we've been sued so many times on this issue. I anticipate we'll be sued again. But I don't think this is going to have any real impact on that.
Director Rice.
I think what a resolution would do is it would make absolutely crystal clear in black and white, if that's possible, opaque and crystal clear, what the intention is, that we find that this board does find that it's a positive use for the community. So that's what a resolution would provide. It wouldn't necessarily prevent us from being sued, but it would be very clear about our intent in taking the action to give the intent to serve. And I would definitely move that we approve the lease and the covenant and maybe direct staff to come back with a resolution stating the reasons why we are. So my motion is specifically to approve the covenant and the lease, and then following motions when
okay.
they come.
Do I have a second for that?
I'll second that, and I'll make an observation that Director Rice was just talking about how we needed to make it in black and white, and that's exactly what she's wearing, so I thought it was just appropriate. So.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? No? Can we have a roll call vote, please, on that one?
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Steidel?
Aye.
Vice President Farmer?
Aye.
President Pearson?
Aye. Okay, that carries 5-0. Now we would like a resolution to basically reiterate what Ms. Bettenhausen has written.
We'll bring that back.
Can we just direct staff to bring back a resolution that includes that no precedent statement
and
the statements about it being public use and the discussion we have.
We'll craft a good resolution then.
Does that
and that will include the intent to serve?
It'll include the intent to serve.
Okay. Good.
So are we all clear?
Yeah, so that'll be on the agenda for next month.
Thank you so much to everybody who worked hard on that. I'm glad to have that moving forward finally.
The ad hoc committee, both of you did a good job on getting that done and moving it along and helping the Historical Society get this done because they want to move the schoolhouse as soon as possible.
I'm sorry. I'd like to acknowledge Laurel Stewart, who did yeoman's work in bringing this all together. John Ellers as well, but especially Laurel. I know how many dozens, maybe hundreds of hours she's put into this project. So thank you, Laurel.
All right, we're on to item 3C then. Again, Mr. Ogren, would you like to introduce the...
Yes. President Pearson, members of the board. President Pearson, members of the board.
Yes.
Item 3C is consideration of approval of right-of-way agreement, easements, and consent to common use agreement with San Luis Obispo County for the Burton Drive MP mile post, his MP, 2.0 slip-out repair project. This is follow-up from a previous agenda item where Director Howell had some comments, and legal counsel is going to speak to the resolution of those issues.
Thank you.
Chairman Pearson, members of the board. As you'll recall, at the May 9th meeting, Director Howell identified some issues with regard to the right-of-way agreement and the easement deed and requested certain modifications be made to them. We did make those modifications, and Phil Acosta, I don't know whether he's here, with the county was extremely helpful and responsive in making the changes. Let me really quickly go through them. Let's see. Specifically, paragraphs 7 and 11 were added to the right-of-way agreement. And on page 2, the fourth paragraph of the easement deed and consent to common use agreement, references to damages were changed to severance damages. And also the words protect in place were added to items 25, 26, and 33 of Exhibit 2. All these changes were actually very beneficial. And I have to say, I'm amazed at the detail with which Director Howell reviewed this document. But all of his requested revisions were beneficial. So with that, I'm glad to answer any questions.
And President Pearson, Mr. Acosta is not in the audience today, but Rachel, and I'm apologizing that I don't remember Rachel's last name, who is with Public Works, is in attendance in case your board has questions.
Okay. Thank you. Well, thank you. And yes, we do owe Director Howell. This is the second time Director Howell has looked over agreements and made sure that we were doing the right thing. So thank you again for doing that. Anyone else have a comment on this particular item? Director Howell.
We did get clarity as to the additional copies that are in the agenda packet?
The agenda packet actually has both the old and the new in it. So what we're talking about approving is the second one that's in the packet, I think.
Yeah, if you go to the back and work your way.
They're the very last two. This thing's in there like five times.
Yes.
But they're the very last two, and I identified the changes that are, they'll have 11 paragraphs in the right-of-way agreement.
So how do we make sure that we indicate the correct one when we make the motion?
If you make the motion, we'll know the correct one.
Public know the correct one? Because that'll be the one in the minutes the next time, or the one will be in force? Or?
Right, that's the one that'll be executed and
Thank
recorded.
You.
Yeah, I'll read it before I sign it. I assure you of that.
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, the date will help. But I'll make sure.
Well, then I move approval of the agreement.
Okay, so we've got a resolution number 19-2019.
I move approval of resolution 19-2019.
A second.
We have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
President Pearson?
Wait. There's no resolution. They're just standalone agreements.
Yeah, that resolution is actually 3D.
Oh, you're right. You're right. So, pardon me.
I don't have that part of my agenda open. Sorry.
If you just move to approve the right-of-way agreement and easement and consent
I withdraw my former motion. So okay. Move.
And I withdraw my second.
Did you want me to restate it?
Yes, please.
That would be moved to approve the right-of-way agreement and easement and consent to common use agreement with San Luis Obispo County for the Burton Drive MP 2.0 slip-out repair project.
So moved.
Seconded.
Okay, now we're on the right page. Thank you. All right, roll call vote, please.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Stidell?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Farmer?
Aye.
President Pearson?
Aye. All right, thank you. Agenda item 3D.
President Pearson, members of the board, item number 3D is discussion and consideration of adoption of Resolution 19-2019 approving water, sustainable water facility, and sewer rate increases effective July 1, 2019, as authorized in Resolution 27-218 in accordance with Proposition 218. And so Director Rice was certainly prompt and ahead of us, and now we're catching up with her.
That was my mistake, not hers. We do have a request for public comment on this, and we'll start out with Ms. Reese and then go to Ms. Heinrichs.
Thank you. As a newer member of the community, I've come to realize that the rate increases is a very contentious issue, and I'm really sorry to see that. Because I've been coming to Cambria for many years, and I never realized how contentious this issue became. So my question is, have we or can we bring in an independent technical specialist who can assess the needs, water, sewer, sustainable facility, for the infrastructure, what the needs are, and prioritize, in their opinion, the projects that need to be done, looking into the future as best we can see. And I understand that we would need to pay that person, but perhaps an independent person, independent of CCSD, independent of the board, could help us find ways to minimize some of those costs. So it could be a cost benefit to bring that type of person in. Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to address that one right now, Mr. Ogren?
Certainly. There has been, independent technical expertise did come in as part of the Prop 218 process, that these rate increases were originally authorized in 2018, and although I wasn't here, I've certainly gained the understanding that there was a lot of community review, including July of last year, where a lot of the details of the prioritization of the projects were reviewed. And Bartow Wells is a well-established firm that helps with the 218 processes. In addition to that, your board has set a number of goals for both the Finance Committee and the Resources Infrastructure Committee, and both committees have done a lot of work over the last several months in order to evaluate prioritizations of the project, including and up to the recent joint committee between the Resource and Infrastructure and Finance Committees. Be glad to elaborate in further detail, but essentially that is something that is being pursued, has been independently, and is currently being pursued at a detail level with the committees.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Heinrichs, followed by Ms. Bettenhausen.
Thank you. It's difficult to oppose rate increases when the district's infrastructure is in such poor condition. It's frustrating that these needs have been clear for years, yet previous boards and staff decided to overlook continuing deterioration in favor of building the emergency water system, which continues to consume most of Cambria's money. The obvious solution is to stop spending money on the EWS. It isn't producing water. It didn't produce any water during the drought. Cambria managed without it. Cambria can't afford it. Please consider. Organizations and businesses sometimes make decisions that take them in the wrong direction. They end up in more debt than they can manage. Sometimes you just have to dig your way out. The plant is often described as a state-of-the-art advanced water treatment facility. Surely some other community would be willing to buy it at a discount. Take the opportunity to reduce this debt as much as possible, even though the district did fail to use the $4 million grant that it had promised to use to reduce the loan. Western Alliance Bank is certainly aware that this installment sale is not working out. Let's go to them and see what can be renegotiated about this agreement. Let's find a buyer. Let's stop the bleeding. When the dimensions of the financial hole have been defined and limited, you on the board will be in a better position to use the money Cambrians pay to fix the sewer plant. A dispassionate observer looking at the district's finances would soon see that Cambria continues to spend so much money on the emergency water system facility that the district doesn't have enough to take care of day-to-day needs. The sooner the district stops pouring money on the emergency water system plant, the sooner and easier it will be to make decisions about the rest of Cambria's infrastructure. My confusion today concerns the separation of revenues. The Prop 218 rate review designated three separate funds for wastewater, water, and the SWF, which is what the district calls the Emergency Water Project. At the previous meeting's budget discussion, funds from the Water Fund, which has a surplus, were applied to the SWF, the Emergency Water System Fund, which needs ever more money. How is this allowed? The public voted on separate increases for separate funds. This appears to be another example of the board presenting finances in one way, then applying the collected revenues as it pleases. Cambria deserves good water and sewer systems. Please use the money you are collecting to provide those services. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen, followed by Ms. Dickinson.
Green here. Thank you very much, Mr. President. I went back to look at the installment sale agreement from 2014, and I quote it here in the document I've just given to you, which I'd like to hold my comments to be in the public record for this meeting, please. In that agreement that the board made at that time, it says, the bank, that's where you got the loan from, the bank has asked the district to pledge three sources of revenues as security for the loan. Number one, net revenues after operating expenses of the district's water utility. Number two, emergency water supply capital surcharges. And number three, ad valorem property taxes. And I won't read the rest of that about the specificity of that. My questions are as follows. Is there a legal requirement for the sequential use of the three sources of revenues? Two, elaborates on that, my second question. Must the net revenues after operating expenses of the district's water utility be used for annual debt service of this loan before the EWS capital surcharges are used? You will realize I've been asking this question to various parties in many ways. Three, and I've not yet received a good answer that's clear to my slow brain. Number three, has the matter of net revenues for the water utility been discussed by the board or a standing committee in relation, on the one hand, to the increase of reserves in the water fund, and on the other hand, to covering deficit spending in the EWS, so-called SWF funds? If so, what is the substance of that discussion? I attend many standing committee meetings, and I have not heard it,
even in finance, which is diligent in their perusal of many issues. Number four, is there any official action by the board of directors of the CCSD that addresses this question? Number five, regarding the Bartlett Wells projection of 2 months of SWF operation in fiscal year 2019-20, for example, would running the plant for 2 months be for the purpose of increasing the revenue in the SWF so-called fund? Or if not, what would be the purpose of running the plant for 2 months in this coming fiscal year? And I've heard no answer to that either. Many times it's been said in the standing committee meetings that we should investigate the presuppositions in Bartlett Wells. This is one of them, but not the only one. And I urge you, please, in your next meeting, to answer specifically, carefully, and extensively the questions I have posed to you in writing today, because you keep making decisions based upon unstated answers. And I, as a member of the public and a ratepayer, would like to know. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Dickinson.
Well, I don't know about the rest of the community, but I'm beyond sick and tired of hearing about your great consultants and how wonderful they are and how we should respect the work that they do. If that was the case, why are we in litigation with CDM Smith, the revered engineering company that we heard so much about? Well, we're not hearing so much about them anymore, are we? Except for the rate-paying money that we're paying for legal expenses. So I mentioned it in the last meeting, the June 2014 notice of proposed increase in water rates to fund an emergency water supply project. It says in the first, the basis for the proposed water rate increase, the increase in water rates is intended to fund the cost of an emergency water supply project. Then it has, it was quite extensive, this rate increase notice. So frequently asked questions. What will the rate increase pay for? The proposed rate increase will be used solely to finance an emergency water supply project on CCSD property off San Simeon Creek Road. Will this rate increase cover any other wet water or wastewater needs? No. The proposed increase is only to fund the emergency water supply project. And it goes on and on. And I want to read from before, and by the way, where are the CIPs? Where are you going to talk, you are going to vote on this, but what are you going to pay, what is going to be used from all this money for infrastructure needs? I don't see anything. So I'd like to see that first, but from Prop 218, so from Article 13D, Section 6, I will go, I won't read the whole thing, but the fee may not be imposed for service unless the service is actually used by or immediately available to the owner of the property subject to the fee. Fees based on potential or future use of a service are not permitted. So where are these CIPs? Where are these future projects that you think you can charge the ratepayers for today if you take any action to do so? Where are they? And why is that fixed rate that I brought up last month of $13 that's been there since September 1st, 2014, fixed rate 13, that's the first under the EWS/SWF, why has that, as of November 1st, been raised by $2.86, and why is it being proposed to be increased again? And where, if we look at, you know, where, if we look at the folks that have apparently, you know, you're looking at retrofit points and we can build because we've got all these retrofit points, I would like to see on some kind of accounting of the billing that proves that these folks, their billings have changed because of all the retrofitting they've done. That would be a good study to be done, truly, to find out, okay, it's not just about, oh, we've done this, this, and this. Let's see the proof of it in their billing. And until we see that, I don't see how you can possibly even consider retrofit points for new development. We have to have sound answers to that. So there's so much more. I mean, you are just raking in ratepayer money to go to the EWS for lawyers to take on CDM Smith when they all, Gruber and Gresham signed off on all this stuff, and I am beyond mad. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Bettenhausen, I didn't mean to just disregard your questions and everything. I just wanted to get all of the comment before we address some of this. So, Mr. Ogren, do you have any opinion, or do you know whether question number one is?
I'm very sorry to interrupt because it's not my place, but I asked that their answers come back in detail, written out at your next meeting. So I'm not in, unless you, sir, want answers right now. But
next meeting is fine with me
as long as I see them.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, do you have any ideas to whether there's a priority of 1, 2, 3, or if there's just those are the ones that we have to consider?
Certainly, I have a fair amount of experience with covenants that are established associated with financing and debt. And the covenants that we see here that Ms. Bettenhausen had provided from the agreement, even though I haven't looked at them specifically, are consistent with the types of covenants that I've seen in many different types of financing agreements. Net revenues after operating expenses is important because financing agencies know that in order to be able to pay off the debt over a long period of time, you have to adequately operate and maintain the facility. So that is written that way to recognize that the owner of the utility has to make sure that they're doing adequate operations and maintenance, and those rate structures need to be adequate to not just cover operations and maintenance, but after that stuff is covered, to be able to also pay off the debt service. The second one, emergency water supply capital surcharges, is one that is maybe a little bit more unique to this situation because, and I would expect it to be, they're financing an emergency water supply. And so they have therefore created some covenants that are specific to this project and to the emergency situation. So they're simply pointing at that as well. And then the third one, which is the ad valorem property tax revenues, what they're essentially saying there is that if the district doesn't collect net revenues or emergency water supply revenues sufficient to pay for the debt service, then the board, when this was approved, obligated the district's property tax revenues. And that is the component of the covenant, which I would say tightens the noose really tight to make sure that, you know, this board and future boards are collecting adequate revenues. Because in the, you know, if the unfortunate situation ever developed where you actually had to use your ad valorem property taxes, then the impacts on fire and facilities and, you know, the other general fund operations that are funded by property taxes, they would be significantly impacted. And that's where, again, I would characterize it as the tightening of the noose, because in the covenants, that is part of way that, what, you know, it's part of the agreement. And if they're not getting paid, then it would be part of, I guess, their demands that they would levy in a lawsuit. So the nature of these covenants is consistent with my experience in financing. That ad valorem property taxes is one where it just means that they're really serious that they need to get paid. Certainly, if your board were to use ad valorem property taxes to pay off the debt service first, I don't think that the bank would matter one way. It wouldn't matter to them. It would matter to the community.
Okay, thank you.
I just want to ask this question again. Am I understanding that in this knowledge of covenants, it is the case that number one source of revenue, net revenues after operating expenses of the district's water utility, is not referring to the regular water rates? It's referring only to the operating expenses of the EWS or SWF? I don't think so. I think it refers to the regular rates. And the question is, has the board ever taken any action to show the public that this using our water rate, good old ordinary water rate money, to pay off deficit spending for the EWS is what you want to be happening? And you might just be agreeing with this that was signed back in 2014, but I can never get a straight answer on whether the board has taken official action to do what you're now doing, saying the water fund includes the two SWF funds. And the water fund is what this district utility reference is all about. I don't think so, but that's my innocent, ignorant, compared to this experience, disagreement with an interpretation of three water sources. Thank you, sir, for letting me say more. I tend often to do that.
Thank you. I think the clarity we can make very clear next month when we show the CIP and we show the budget for next year. But I would point you to the audits that we've had done, and the audits indicate that we have two enterprise funds, and that's all we've ever had is two enterprise funds. The SWF, okay, or EWS, whichever you want to call it, is part of the water enterprise. And so that's where the quote unquote misunderstanding may be. Okay, all of those revenues really go in the same place. The agreement we signed with the bank says that we have to have a separate ledger, kind of, for the SWF EWS. Mm-hmm. And that's why we have it separate all mm-hmm. the time, and that's why there's a separate rate category, mm-hmm. is because the loan document actually states mm-hmm. that we have to do that. Okay? So, again, next month when we bring the budget forward and we bring the CIP forward that was worked on by the Finance Committee and the R&I Committee, you'll have a much better understanding of where these funds are going to be used. And I think it's the opinion of both Director Howell of the R&I Committee and Director Steidel from the Finance Committee that the rates are necessary. This rate increase that we're going to vote on here shortly is necessary for us to continue on with doing what we are trying to do as far as fixing the wastewater, the water, and preserving the EWS until it becomes the SWF or whatever. No, I'm sorry, Ms. Dickinson. Mr. Howell.
Thoughtless.
Okay. Steidel.
One thing I wanted to address also that the CIP has been in existence for months. It's been going through the R&I committee. It's been going through the finance committee. It was gone through in terms of discussions even that happened in the joint committee meeting. So it isn't as though it hasn't been in existence or hasn't been discussed and isn't part of the current budget process. And the public's attendance at R&I committee meetings and the public's attendance at finance committee meetings provides that opportunity for them to provide feedback in taking a look at the CIP activities and hearing what the CIP requirements and needs are from the professionals who are actually operating those plants. So it's a misnomer to say that the CIP doesn't exist. So I wanted to clarify that in the first place. The second thing I wanted to mention is that the first statement in this attachment that was provided by Dr. Bettenhausen, the first sentence defines very specifically that the bank has asked the district to pledge three sources as security for the loan. So it's not defining the manner in which we have to address what we're doing with those, other than obviously the fact that it's practical that we would be taking or supporting the cost from the water utility and not using ad valorem costs to be able to sustain it. But this is talking about, in loan language, it's saying
okay, here are your sources that you are going to commit yourself to legally to be able to repay this loan. And it's not defining the fact that you have to march to this certain order.
Yes, Director Howell.
I remembered what I was going to say.
Good.
To reiterate what President Pearson said, the verbiage in the financing agreement does in fact require us to keep a separate set of books specifically to keep track of the, as it says here, the fixed meter charge that's actually in the agreement, and the water quantity charge is also in the agreement. These are, we are required to have those as separate items in our bill, and we are required to keep track of that. I would like to suggest, however, to staff that the third item on here, emergency water supply operating charge, excuse me, this is no longer valid because it has been folded into the water quantity charge, yet we still see it on the bill. I think this is a source of confusion and should be removed. So please consider doing that. But again, just to get very clear about where, so when you see your bill, the amount that we are, in theory, sequestering for use and to support the EWS, that is to say, the loan payments, largely the loan payment, and the principal and the interest of the loan, are those other two items, the water quantity charge and the fixed meter charge. But to remind people that the operating charge has been folded into that, and that's really, as we're increasing, the rate increase that we're talking about is really covering those things. So I hope maybe I've sown even more confusion out in the world, but it's just to be aware that it is part, as Dr. Bettenhausen said, it is part of the financing agreement. This isn't something we just invented.
Correct. Thank you.
And President Pearson, Ms. Duffield can speak to the billings.
Okay. Thank you.
So that's a good question, and we just had this very question that we had discussed with the ad hoc committee, the finance ad hoc committee reviewing the budget. And so we have talked to the programmers at MOMS, and that will be removed from the bills. So the next bill that you get, you will not see the SWF operational charge appear in the bill anymore.
Good. All right. Other Vice President Farmer.
You were going to say something.
No, I was asking for more discussion.
Oh, okay, cool. I'm not so sure that whatever I'm about to say right now hasn't already been stated by members of the public or by staff or by other members of the board. But I just wanted to kind of, since I took time to prepare my comments here, I thought I would just run this by everyone's ears and just let you know my feelings about the situation. So I'm looking at under 3D here, the first paragraph under fiscal impact, and it describes the water rate increases and what they're going to be with regard to water and capital improvements, everything like that. And it says, and the SWF rates are designed to help restore balanced budgets, assuming the facility is in operation for 2 months of each year on average. Well, first off, we know that that's most likely not going to take place for a variety of different reasons. Other than a practice run this summer to confirm that the facility is running fine, plus required maintenance is going to need to take place, this plant isn't going to be running. It also states here in the following paragraph, the Bartles and Wells analysis indicates that increases prescribed for this coming July 1st will increase water rates by 10%, SWF rates by 14%, and sewer rates by 15%. Obviously, we need water and sewer 24/7, 365, whereas the SWF isn't even operating at all, and this money is basically going to pay the debt that we owe to the bank. I just want to make a comment with regard to how much we are paying for this facility. I do want to make a remark beforehand. President Pearson and myself attended the State Water Board meeting this past Friday at the Regional Water Quality Control District. And basically, this was to address the permit to remove brine from the impoundment basin. John Rocky with Regional did an excellent job of kind of describing the facility, representing the needed relevant information. But he made these following comments regarding the emergency water facility, SWF, whatever. He said, and I'm quoting him, it's a pretty unique facility. Rarely do facilities sit idle for such a long period of time. But what hasn't sat idle is, you know, the cost to the ratepayers of this community for expenses incurred by this facility. I just want to mention, last year, calendar year 2018, over $1.2 million was spent on this facility, your money. So far this year, if you combine, this is the first 4 months, January through April, if you combine the $204,000 for various expenses and the just under $330,000 for the payment to buy the facility back from the bank, you have a grand total of $534,000 for the first 4 months of this calendar year. I also want to mention, with regard to the work that the Finance Committee, as well as Resources and Infrastructure, they've been doing an excellent job in addressing the fiscal challenges facing the district, you know, and the ratepayers of the community. So I don't want to dismiss what they've endeavored to do that is of value to the district and to the community. But the bottom line is that, you know, personally, I find it really difficult to increase the payment of the ratepayers by 14% for a facility that isn't running, and all you're basically doing is providing money to buy this back from the bank. And it's when we feel that there's so much monies that need to be spent on infrastructure improvements for water and especially sewer, and yet the amount for this facility is more than water and just about the same as sewer, I find it very, I think what Ms. Dickinson said, that she was really mad. I'm going to remain calm here, but I'm mad too, especially for the ratepayers of the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Director Rice.
Firstly, I think any dispassionate viewer looking at our finances would quickly become passionate, because it is very clear that we have issues that we have to deal with. I want to put this decision into a larger context, because I think that's critical, especially for folks that haven't been around as long. One, the Bartle Wells study is based on the best possible projections. One of the reasons we're revisiting this each year is so that it doesn't just automatically go. And we have a finance committee that looked it over, and the resources and infrastructure that looked it over, to ensure that those predictions that were made in the study were actually at least close to on target, because we can't go higher than what the rate study requested. But we wanted to be sure, the board at the time that this was done, the board wanted to be sure that it wasn't just staff automatically turning up the rates, that the board had a chance to look at it. And the board has had a chance to look at it, and we now have standing committees, which at the time were either brand new or hadn't quite even been put into place yet. So I think we're doing a much better job at looking at what these rates are going to, both whether we need to implement the raise or and also after that raise, that we're watching where those monies are going. Frankly, it's a little bit frustrating to me, because we set this up so that the board could have some say in whether or not they go up, even though the community didn't have a successful protest. the fact that we're looking at it now and then saying, well, we don't need a rate increase and people are mad, except that this, the whole point of doing this process wasn't to have us, I'll take it. I want as many people in this room as we can have for any item that's going on. I'm not complaining about having people upset. People should be upset. It gets them involved. It's just one of the things that happens. So I'm not trying to be critical, but it is a little bit hard to then want to continue to do openness if every time we're open and trying to make sure we're doing our job of oversight, we get beat up. Just is a bit of a, dissuades the board maybe a little bit. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't come and express your thoughts. I want that to happen, and we need to know, because that's what keeps us on track. So I just wanted to kind of say that. Still bring them. I want to hear the comments, good and bad, but it, you know, keep in mind this is part of why sometimes it feels like it's very difficult to get things done, because we don't want to be beat up. I mean, we're human beings up here too, at least last I checked. So unless there's other comments, I'm prepared to make a motion.
I do have a couple of lights on. Okay. Director Steidel.
I think what it's something I support also. I think what I was hearing from Director Rice is we appreciate civil discourse. And by civil discourse, we have the ability to exchange information and respect one another and appreciate the information that each brings to the table. And I'll make one more observation in that when we initially had gotten approval from the community for the 218 rate increases, and that went into effect, one of the actions that President Pearson had taken was to make sure that we come back on an annual basis to review the need for the rates. And so that review process is what R&I has done and finance has done, and taking a look at the things that need to happen. And I'll take a couple of steps back to that the original CIPs that were put together a couple of years ago. Well, this is a fairly new process, actually, that has been going on and has been in discussion with the community and has had the opportunity to have committees be involved in their progress, is that when we looked at what those CIPs were originally, we knew even at that time that the 218 rates that would go in effect would be insufficient to cover the needs for what the CIPs had defined. And we knew at that time that we were going to have to then continue to look for additional sources of monies to be able to address all of the CIP needs, whether that was in grants or loans or whatever it may be, whatever creative resource was available for being able to do that. So I just want to remind people about that. That kind of falls off the table sometimes. The 218 wasn't intended to be able to solve all the issues that are brought and part of what the district is dealing with, but it sure helped us get us on a healthier path towards things. And the other thing I'll mention is that although the plant itself isn't running right now, it just goes through maintenance cycles, which are an offline thing that don't have disposal associated with it. Those monies aren't just kind of seeping out of the cracks someplace. They're going to be identified very specifically within the budgeting process and be targeted and defined. So I will, you know, as a precursor to the information that will be coming from the budget, I'll detail that out at this time to let you know that.
Thank you. Director Howell.
Yeah, I do have kind of a question here. I've been thinking about this a little. Yeah, what I haven't heard, and I'm trying to get back in my mind to see if it was ever mentioned in other discussions, the proposed 14% increase for the SWF charges would imply that what we are collecting now is not sufficient to cover the current and anticipated expenses of the SWS. Is that a correct statement? In other words, are we not collecting enough money now? Because I haven't seen real evidence of that myself. So could someone going to expand on that a little? And
well, we did run a $400,000 deficit, or we are this
year. We are
year.
A deficit, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
It was in the budget, the draft budget we looked at.
Excess water, which is one of the reasons that current, yes. Future, maybe not, okay? But current, with all of the issues that we're dealing with from the regional board, which is, you know, which we have to do, okay? And with our preparation and our ongoing work that we're doing in order to get a permanent coastal permit for the facility, and the maintenance that we've discovered we have to do, which and one of the things that came up by John Rocky was that we weren't doing enough maintenance, and he thought we should be doing more and running the plant more. You know, all of those things added up are causing us to be in a deficit right now. And the bond, okay, a $70,000-plus bond that we've had to provide every year so far because that was a requirement of the regional board again. When the pond is empty next month, yes, when the pond is empty next month, okay, Mr. Rocky will come in and observe that it is and that it's done, and we will no longer have to provide that bond, okay, which is wonderful news because that's $70,000 plus that we're not going to have to budget for next year. So, yes, for current, what we're doing and what we're having to get done, yeah, we need it. For future, at some point, after we get the CDP and after we get everything settled out, we'll have to take a look at it. And that's when the rates come up again for review, and that's when we might do something different at that point in time. So.
Thank you. I just wanted to get clarity on that because I think that is the area where we're getting much of the concern. So to just reiterate, we need the money just to pay our anticipated expenses for the, I'll use EWS,
for the immediate future,
yes. At least in 2020, right?
Correct.
So we need to do it for that because we could approve some of the rate, you know, we could approve water and wastewater and not the EWS if we wanted to.
Yes.
We have that option.
We have that option, yeah. And we made sure that we had that option so that maybe next time at this particular time we can say, hey, we've now got the SWF or the EWS to a point where we now have a very good handle on what it's going to take to run that thing on a regular basis, maintenance, and et cetera. And we can actually not, maybe not, okay? I can't vouch
well,
for
who knows?
Yeah.
Thank you. I just wanted
sure.
to get clarity on that point.
Yes, Director Steinle.
The only other thing that we want to keep in the back of our minds as we're going through that process is determining for ourselves prior to that what type of reserves we want to maintain within each of the enterprises. And so that's one more element for consideration.
Okay. You, Director Rice, staff, we asked that you might want to give us a brief rundown on the SWF budget, but we're going to save that for June. Okay. One thing before we go, both of these committees have done yeoman's work in reviewing this and looking at the finances and looking at the CIP and looking at how the Prop 218 money is coming in and how we're spending it and how we're going to spend it. And I apologize that there's no readily medium available to let you know when those committees meet, other than they are on the CCST website. So if you would like to go to those meetings, and I really encourage you to do that because those meetings are much less formal. There's a good give and take at those meetings, in the most part. Those meetings are made up of five citizens, okay, and one board member who is emeritus. So that board member is the chairman and kind of runs the thing, but the votes and everything are taken by the five citizens who are on that particular committee. And I think they have done a marvelous job, okay, of trying to get this straight and give us a good budget that we're going to be presenting next month. And if you want to attend those meetings, I encourage you to do so, and they are all listed out on the CCSD website so that you can visit those, okay? Director Rice, first.
Do we have a mail list for the committee agenda distributions that people can get onto? Because I know you can sign up to get the regular board meeting agenda by email.
Yes.
So if somebody wanted to get those agendas, that would also have the date in their email. They just need to contact the district. What's the best way for them to approach that?
Yes, they could call or email us.
Wonderful. Okay, so that is another way they can find out.
To get it automatically instead of you having to go out there and search. But right now, I think the meetings are currently scheduled for the rest of the year right now, right? Mm-hmm. So you can go out there and at least look at that and start attending.
And then I wanted to follow up on something that Cindy said. One of the reasons why we're doing this as a multi-year increase is we didn't want to hit the community with the amount that we needed all at once at the front end, so that we spread it out so that by the time we get through the end of the 3 years, we're at a level that will actually meet our needs. And we knew the first year was still going to leave us not in the best position, which is one of the reasons we need this. The other thing I'd like to point out is that that our advanced water treatment plant is maybe not producing water right now, but our fire department is also not putting out a forest fire right now, and we pay them money, too, for not doing anything. So I just wanted to put that out there. They do a great job. They do tons of other stuff when there isn't fires. I'm not saying they don't do anything. They're not the advanced water treatment plant, but we pay for things all the time that we're not currently.
Okay. Vice President Farmer.
I just wanted to suggest that since we have the chairpersons of both Finance Committee and Resources and Infrastructure, that they could just mention right now when you folks meet, so people that are here in the audience or watching out there can put that in their brain and make a note of it.
Okay, Director Howell's searching. Director Steidel.
We meet on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 10 a.m. to noon. And it's generally in the small conference room, not conference room, but the small side room here at the Vets Hall. And also one thing I will mention, there was and I don't know whether this is going to be done on a regular basis, but there was a listing that was put out by CCSD to at least the board members that I know. There was a listing of all of the meetings through each of the weeks of the month. And yeah, I'm thinking that maybe even posting that at CCSD so people could always stop in to see what meetings they were, or potentially, I mean, even putting them on the front door of the CCSD so that people could just go up and take a look and see that it just might be another resource for people to know about access to the meetings.
Or maybe an ad in the paper now that we don't have a full-time reporter. Not an article. I'm talking about an ad, a regular space in the paper that the district would pay for that would actually announce these things, so people had another resource for getting that information. Because I know that Mrs. Tanner is overworked in her part-time reporter role. Perhaps there's another way that we can put ourselves into the paper that wouldn't be too expensive, but would... I know that every week there's that half-page ad about what the churches are doing. We could surely do a quarter page or smaller just to have a regular thing in there for what's upcoming.
Yeah, I'll talk to her about that and see if we can get that done. Okay. Vice President Farmer.
Oh, so maybe the district can have some religion and get right out there. So what I'd like
separation.
What I'd like to comment on, and it's a little awkward to do this, but I hope people understand, and obviously I have a lot of outrage over this water facility on San Simeon Creek Road, but the members of this board aren't responsible for the fact that this facility exists. Even while Director Rice voted for the facility, she voted against the loan. So I hope people understand that. So the burdens that we have financially from this facility, we didn't create. And I just want to say that between the standing committees and this board that is much different than any board that has preceded it, we are doing the best that we can. I understand the concerns, the frustrations that the members of the community have. And we're kind of divided on this facility, but we respect each other. We respect the community for what they say. That hasn't always happened in the past. And so we're trying to do things differently, and I hope people appreciate that. Thank you.
Okay. Director Howell.
The R&I meetings, I was trying to find a consistency. The best way to say that is we meet the Tuesday after the first board meeting of every month. Since the first board meeting is on a Thursday, we meet the following Tuesday.
Okay.
Yeah.
And again, those are all out on the CCSD website if you want to know the exact schedule. Okay. I will entertain a motion.
I move the board approves Resolution 19-2019.
Okay. Second.
The resolution approving the water. The water sustainable water facility and wastewater rate increases effective July 1st, 2019.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any more discussion?
No.
All right.
I just want to say that I'll be voting against this, and it's because of the amount of increase for the water facility. I wouldn't feel comfortable. I don't think the people that... obviously, I represent everybody in this community, but I don't think the people that voted for me have very fond feelings about this facility and the continued expense that the ratepayers incur as a result. So I'll be voting no on this. Thank you.
All right. Yes, Director Howell.
I need to. I will be voting yes on this, but I would like to be clear that I am concerned, and even though I am concerned, and I do accept the fact that we do need the money, at least for this coming fiscal year. Now, when I come back again next year, I may have an entirely different. Mm-hmm. But I want people to understand that I am very much unhappy about what has gone on over these past almost 10 years. But we are where we are, and we have to make the best of it.
Agreed.
I just want to say going further into the red wasn't even a consideration for me. So I think we need to do everything we can to keep from continuing that bad practice.
Yeah, and we've got to establish some reserves at some point, and this is a way to get there. All right, let's have a roll call vote, please.
Director Rice?
Aye.
Director Steidel?
Aye.
Director Howell?
Aye.
Vice President Farmer?
I'm just I think I'm just going to abstain.
Okay.
President Pearson.
Aye. All right. Thank you, everyone on that one. We'll now move on to agenda item 4A, which is adoption of the itemized report of water and wastewater standby or availability charges for the collection on the county tax rolls. So, Mr. Ogren.
Certainly, President Pearson, members of the board, members of the public. Agenda number 4A is a public hearing, a discussion and consideration of adoption of the itemized report of water and wastewater standby or availability charges for collection on the county's tax rolls. This item that is presented to you today is consistent with similar items for the past many years. When Prop 218 was adopted, availability and standby charges were grandfathered in. The rates haven't changed over the years. Again, a relatively routine consistent with prior years. And both your finance director, Ms. Duffield, and legal counsel, Mr. Carmel, can help with any of the questions that your board might have and some of the past efforts associated with this.
All right, any discussion? Okay, this one's going to be an easy one here. Can we have a, yes, Mr. Carmel.
Just for the record, it's a public hearing, so you may want to just open the public hearing and see if anyone wants to speak.
Open the public hearing. Any comments from the public? Okay. Close the public hearing. All right. Do I have a motion to approve the resolution?
So moved.
So moved. And a second?
I'll second.
And Stidell seconds. Can we have a roll call vote?
Director Howell?
Aye.
Director Stidell?
Aye.
Director Rice?
No.
Vice President Farmer?
Aye.
President Pearson?
Aye. All right. Future agenda items. Anyone have anything in particular? Director Rice?
I don't know if we need to look at our shutoff policy and ensure that it's going to be consistent with the law.
Certainly we do need to. The changes in statute regarding shutoffs go into effect in 2020. So that's an item that we were anticipating bringing to your board this fall.
Wonderful. And then the pilch item that we had before us a couple of, maybe 5-6 months ago, needs to come back before August is what my notes from when I was president say. The pilch.
That hasn't even come back to NCAC yet.
I'm just saying that for us, because I think there's like an expiration of the intent to serve or something. The extension
intent to serve runs out like 6 September.
Because we had a debate about that.
And I have just recently been starting to be brought up to speed on the extensions. In fact, I had a meeting with Ms. Bland this morning. And so I'm not sure that it's just the pilch. There may be others as well. And so we are initiating our steps in order to get our arms around that and anticipate an item in the, in the upcoming future for your board.
Okay. Good. Two items. Anything else? Yes.
I'd like to bring something forward. I have not had an opportunity to talk directly to Director Howell on this, but I think there are a couple of elements of the bylaws for the standing committees. That we probably need to talk through because it occurs to me as different committees have had different perceptions of some items that possibly there's some direction that needs to come from the board of directors about it, and it tends to have to do with the terms of appointments and the processes for the appointments and how to deal with the reappointments if there are resignation.
Okay.
I think this was referred to the policy committee to look at the bylaws of the two other committees and reconcile and bring to the board.
Okay, so do you want to do that? Can you do that
we already have on our agenda for next week because of the discussion we had on the 9th.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
So to prevent any Brown Act issues, what we'll do is we're going to get copies in our packet. We'll have copies of each of your committee's bylaws, and we're going to put that. I don't know how my committee is going to look at that yet. We might do an ad hoc committee or just do it in committee. I don't know yet, but that's on our agenda for next week.
Okay. Yeah, we need to move that one along if we can.
Yep, that's the idea.
Okay, good.
Thank you for bringing it up.
Anyone else? All right. Before we adjourn to closed session, I would like to kind of review the way I see public comment. I'm sorry I closed off Ms. Dickinson. I'm sorry she's not here anymore. But I don't think it's the right policy or the right procedure or process for us to get into a conversation with the public. That's not why we're here. We have public comment at the beginning on items not on the agenda, and then we have public comment on each item if you want to speak on it. We love to hear your comments. We like that. And then we try to answer what we can, and we absorb. I can guarantee you we absorb all of what you say, and we try to use that in future decisions and in future action items. But getting into a give and take with the public audience is just makes it really, really difficult to run the meeting and stuff. So I apologize if I have to cut people off sometimes because of that, but I'm afraid that's the way we've got to run the meeting. So, again, yeah, the town halls are different. That is an engagement. And, in fact, most of the standing committees are pretty much a give and take, and you can do that much better on that in that forum than you can here. So, again, I refer you to those committees where you can get a lot more of that dialogue going than you can here. All right. If nothing else is on the agenda, Director Carmel?
Mr. Carmel. Boy, that's a pay cut if I ever heard one.
Yeah, really.
I was just going to refer to the agenda item number 6 as closed session.
Oh, okay. Yes, we are adjourning to closed session.